From Tribune Tower, WGN Radio presents A Conversation.
I want to make one thing perfectly clear.
A dialogue.
What are you prepared to do?
An astute debate.
Everything within the law.
And a peek behind the curtain of politics.
And then what are you prepared to do?
I think Chicago is not only the center of the country, I think it's the center of the world.
Don't tread on them.
Where did this statement come from?
This is the Sunday Spin. Your host is the Chicago Tribune's Rick Pearson.
Good Sunday morning, everyone. I'm Rick Pearson, the Chicago Tribune, and welcome to this week's edition of the Sunday Spin for October 23rd, 2016. This is our weekly look at politics as we count down the days until the November 8th election. Time to grab that Sunday paper, go get that cup of coffee. And I don't know that we can do anything better to get this week off to a great start. I mean, what a Sunday it is. What a Sunday to celebrate. 71 years wiped away with a 5-0 whitewash of the Los Angeles Dodgers by our Chicago Cubs. And so on to Cleveland Tuesday night. And Andy, I heard you say earlier about, you know, people somewhat viewing it as a surprise that Cleveland is the American League winner. But I have to tell you, when I was out at the Republican National Convention in July, the folks out in Cleveland were saying, we can only imagine a Cleveland Cubs World Series.
Yeah, you know, their drought is only 40 years longer than the Cubs. If that makes 40 years shorter. They were last champions in 48, and of course the Cubs in 08. You know, the Indians have been there in recent vintage. They lost both in 97 and 95 to the Braves in 95 and the Marlins in that crazy walk-off win in Game 7 in 97. So they've at least tasted American League championships in the recent memory.
They've had a pennant.
Yeah, a couple of them.
Yeah.
In the 90s.
It's just so amazing this time. And I was tweeting with a friend of mine out in Washington, D.C., and he goes, you know, it's hard not to be emotional about this when you think of, you know, family and friends who are no longer with us, who, you know, just would be just so joyous over all of this.
Yeah, I told the story last night on our post game show that you know, the first 15 minutes after the game ended, I was basically reduced to a blubbering idiot, and I don't mind telling everybody that. I was thinking about my dear departed friend Ron Santo and how much he would have enjoyed the moment.
I think everybody was thinking about Ronnie.
Yeah, and you know, Ernie Banks and Billy, and then, you know, I got around to family members finally. You know, my father who was 3 years old in 45, and when I talked to him, I called him tonight. He didn't answer the phone the first time I called him. I called him back. I'm like, "What are you doing?" He goes, "What do you mean? They still got four more to go. Call me back after that." I'm like, let's enjoy this, can't we? Can we kind of enjoy this for a little bit here?
Oh, we've got to enjoy it. We've got to enjoy it. I mean, and you know, I was thinking of my mom because she was the one who basically turned me into being a Cubs fan, and it kind of reminded me of with the Blackhawks, and it was my dad that turned me into a Blackhawks fan, and both of them no longer with us. But you just, so many people, so many thoughts, so many emotions go through your head. And I mean, Dave brought out his Cubs sweater. That's
a good looking shirt too.
It really is.
You like that?
Yes. Of course, it's never been worn, right? Until now.
Not about the last 30 years. Yeah. I'm surprised there, you know, it doesn't have moth holes in it or something like that. But just to describe it, because we are on the radio, it's kind of a replica, of, so to speak, of the jerseys that they would wear in 1907 and 1908.
Yeah, vintage.
And the legendary phrase, "Tinkers to Evers to Chance," is on it, and a picture of the 1907 World Series Cubs on the back of it.
Yeah, that's, I mean, how can you just not take all of this in and enjoy it? And it's just too bad that frankly, it'd be nice to have a little break to the World Series, you know, just to be able to enjoy this just a little bit more. But a longer break would just give Cleveland more time off.
Yeah, we're on a roll here. Yeah, let the excitement continue. And I thought it was nice last night that everybody on TV brought up Jack Brickhouse and Harry Carey, you know, that the fact that, you know, Jack especially going back to the late 1940s and early 1950s, I remember growing up all my life saying, you know, 1969, this could be the year. And into the 70s. This could be the year. And, well, you know, those who are no longer with us, as you say, were pulling some strings for us this season.
Yeah, everybody, you know, I keep saying we're not going to get ahead of over the skis on this one. Mm-hmm. But and part of the reason is because, I mean, I remember 1969.
Yep.
And I will never forget 1969.
Yep.
And, you know, at the time, rolling into August, you know, everybody, it was a foregone conclusion that this was the Cubs' year. I mean, the town was just swept by the Cubs. They were at the grocery store, they're handing out, you know, player pictures. And, you know, it was just inevitable.
That's right. They were doing things like that.
And then we all know what happened. I've just instructed everybody, you know, who kind of gets a little bit upset and whatever, just patience. And, 108 years is a lot of patience.
A lot of patience.
You know, it's funny, you mentioned the 69 club, and, you know, my more recent memory is the 84 team, and then, you know, being around the 2003 situation, and, you know, you try not to, as you say, allow yourself to get out ahead of your skis. This group, going back to last year and into this year, does not seem to be a group that's fazed by a whole lot, especially of the vintage stuff, the Billy Goat. They go, what is that? I mean, I don't get that. What is that all about? They don't know 84. They don't know even 89 or 98. Most of these guys were born in the early 1990s, late 1980s, and they could give a hoot about what was going on. They're in the moment here. They get it. They understand the magnitude of what they're doing right now. I think that several of the younger players put it very eloquently on the field, and we'll get to a lot of their audio here this morning. But they're not fazed by that stuff, and I don't think they ever really thought, oh, here we go again. You know, they just kind of did their thing and what Joe Maddon has them doing.
No, they understand the history.
They do, but they don't
wear it.
Yeah, they don't wear it, and they're not bound by it. They just kind of go out there and play free, loose, and easy, and you know, it seems to have been working the last couple of years, so don't change it.
Absolutely. And you know, someone put on Twitter about the things that didn't exist when the Cubs last won the National League pennant in 1945.
Barely television.
Well,
yeah,
just barely.
Yeah, that game was not that series was not televised.
No.
Joe Maddon, the NBA,
mm-hmm.
Obviously microwaves, satellites. Hula hoops weren't even invented yet.
Hmm.
Alaska and Hawaii weren't states. The Los Angeles Dodgers didn't technically exist.
Nope.
Credit cards. Diet Pop. the Korean War.
Right, it was just after World War II.
Right. Velcro. No Barbie dolls.
Hmm.
Mr. Potato Head.
No rock and roll.
No pacemakers. I mean, it's unbelievable. Unbelievable how much time has gone by. But
no cell phones.
Or
no internet.
Or smartphones.
Or smartphones.
Yeah, no internet. That's right. No Twitter.
you couldn't tweet about these things back then.
That's exactly right.
There was no, instead of Facebook, it was scrapbook then. You had a book of the pictures from the 1945 Cubs.
And you had to wait for the film to get developed.
Yes.
I tweeted out some fun facts about it, and Lou Maffredini came back with a great retort for me. But let's see, Harry S. Truman, president, average wages per year was $2,400. Cost of a gallon of gas was 15 cents, and the average cost of a new car was just over $1,000. And Lou wrote back, yeah, just about the lowest price you'll see for a World Series ticket.
If you see one
if
for
you
that
see one, oh, see yeah, one. If you yes. see one for that much, grab it, because you're not going to do any better.
And that might be in Cleveland.
Yeah, good point.
I mean, I was actually wondering if it wouldn't be cheaper to, you know, fly to Cleveland and go to a World Series game in Cleveland than it will be to try to go into Wrigley Field. The same way I was telling Dean Richards, because Hamilton is also going to be going to Cleveland.
Mm, okay.
And I said the same thing. It might be easier to go to Cleveland and their theater district to see that show than it would be to do it here in Chicago. But just what a fantastic day. A big win by the Blackhawks.
Right.
But it's Toronto, and they won in a shootout.
Yeah, they came back, though. I mean, they showed some stuff. You know, Toronto's got a young team.
But after losing to Columbus on Friday, this is...
They're trying to find themselves a little bit here, I think, in the early going with six young players that were not on their roster last year that didn't even have any NHL experience. Tyler Motte scored his second straight game, his first two NHL goals. There's something to kind of build on here, but it's the veteran guys that need to, you know, kind of get things going a little bit. And today it was Taves and Panarin scoring in the shootout to get the Hawks the win.
No, Andy, and I agree. I mean, and the young kids, they bring some energy and all of that. But
they're going to make some mistakes, and that's inevitable.
Mistakes and also the playmaking, you know, needs to tighten up. Mm-hmm. And, of course, you've got Coach Q juggling some lines, juggling players on lines, trying to find the matchups. I mean, you know, I think it'll be a good season, and I'm always going to be the Blackhawks fan I am. But I think it's also one where we kind of have to wait and see how things develop.
Yeah, you know, this could be a late developing situation for this team. I mean, they may go the first, 20, 30 games, just still trying to set their lines, dealing with some injuries at this point, too, which is not helpful. Andrew Desjardins has been out for a while, and Hossa missed a couple of games already, and Trevor Van Riemsdyk is out with the arm injury. So, I mean, there's some things to kind of figure out, but you need to worry about, and so far it hasn't really been a worry. Is the goaltending. I think both Crawford and Darling have been good. The penalty killing has been awful. But, again, I think that has a lot to do with trying to figure out which units to put out when. And I think Coach Q is still trying to, you know, kind of see who fits.
Yeah, the goaltending, I think, has been great. But you're right. The penalty kill's
been terrible.
Awful. And so is the power play.
Power play has been less than powerful.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Well, Dave's here to keep us up on all the news. Andy's here with sports this morning. Producer Jasmine is here to field your phone calls at 312-981-7200. You can also text us at 312-981-7200. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/thesundayspin. And we're on Twitter at @SundaySpin. Engineer Bob, of course, is here to try to keep me calm and patient. And here in the Allstate Showcase studio. Remember, as always, you can find our shows on WGNRadio.com. You can also get our podcasts at iTunes by searching Rick Pearson. We've got a great show today. After the 7:30 news update from Dave, we'll speak to Jim Allen. He's the spokesman for the Chicago Board of Elections. We'll be talking to him about the start of in-precinct early voting, as well as all that talk about the vote results being rigged. Dave will be back at the top of the hour with more news, and then we'll speak with my good friend John McCormick. He's a political writer at Bloomberg News, and we'll talk about the race for the White House. And after the 8:30 news update, we'll be joined by State Senator Dan Biss. He's a Democrat from Evanston. Dan Biss is behind this recent TV campaign that seeks to link Donald Trump to Republican Governor Bruce Rauner. That's all coming up, but first it's time for a break. You're listening to The Sunday Spin on WGN. Mackerel, no doubt about it, the Cubs are on their way.
They've got the hustle, they've got the hustle.
The Chicago Cubs are on their way.
Hey, hey!
Oh, what a glorious Sunday it is here in Chicago.
Clear skies.
And let's
magnificent
hope
sunrise.
And let's hope it's clear sailing ahead.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's time for our weekly spin through national politics, and obviously we're running a little bit behind on that with the Cubs, but I'm going to play some of these cuts throughout the show here, and I wanted to lead off with some of the highlights, or perhaps you'd call them lowlights, of last week's debate, which was seen by more than 70 million people between Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton. And, of course, there was the issue of Russian President Vladimir Putin and whether he is having an undue presence in this election.
Putin, from everything I see, has no respect for this person.
Well, that's because he'd rather have a puppet as president of
no
the United
puppet,
States.
No puppet.
And It's pretty clear.
You're the puppet.
It's pretty clear you won't admit that
the
Russians have engaged in cyber attacks against the United States of America, that you encouraged espionage against our people, that you are willing to spout the Putin line, sign up for his wish list, break up NATO, do whatever he wants to do.
And yeah, there you go, Vladimir Putin and his effect on the election. Also, Clinton called on Trump to defend his immigration proposals. And, of course, Trump couldn't help himself, referring to some as bad hombres.
Stop the drugs. We shore up the border. One of my first acts will be to get all of the drug lords, all of the bad ones. We have some bad, bad people in this country that have to go out. We're going to get them out. We're going to secure the border. And once the border is secured, at a later date, we'll make a determination as to the rest. But we have some bad hombres here, and we're going to get them out.
When it comes to the wall that Donald talks about building, he went to Mexico. He had a meeting with the Mexican president. Didn't even raise it. He choked. And then got into a Twitter war because the Mexican president said, we're not paying for that wall. So I think we are both a nation of immigrants and we are a nation of laws, and that we can act accordingly.
A couple of highlights from last week's debate, and we'll have a couple of more of those as we go throughout the morning's show. Right now, it's time for a quick break. You're listening to the Sunday Spin on WGN. Up ahead this morning on the Sunday Spin, we'll be speaking with Jim Allen. He's the spokesman for the Chicago Board of Elections.
Now back to the Tribune's Rick Pearson. It's the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN.
Good Sunday morning, everyone. Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune here in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue in Tribune Tower, where the Tribune Tower is proudly flying the Fly the W flags today as we are here in the studio. Congratulating the Chicago Cubs on winning the National League pennant. Well, turning to politics a little bit, I said we're kind of going to run a little bit late because there's so much Cubs activity to talk about. But getting back to the politics in the presidential race, Donald Trump, as he did yesterday in Gettysburg during the debate, denounced the women who accused him of inappropriate behavior, and he promised to sue them in his first 100 days in office. But in the debate, Trump said no one has more respect for women than he does. And then he did this.
My Social Security payroll contribution will go up, as will Donald's, assuming he can't figure out how to get out of it. But what we want to do is to replenish the Social Security Trust Fund.
Such a nasty woman. Well, Trump has blamed the Clinton camp for stirring up all of the allegations from women about him, saying it's part of the concerted efforts against him.
And I didn't even apologize to my wife, who's sitting right here, because I didn't do anything. I didn't know any of these women. I didn't see these women. These women, the woman on the plane, the woman, I think they want either fame or her campaign did it. And I think it's her campaign, because what I saw, what they did, which is a criminal act, by the way, where they're telling people to go out and start fistfights and start violence. And I'll tell you what, in particular in Chicago, people were hurt and people could have been killed in that riot. And that was now all on tape, started by her.
And that's Donald Trump. Of course, he's talking about the undercover videotape that was made by conservative James O'Keefe in his Operation Project Veritas, which the heavily edited tape tries to portray that this was an orchestrated conspiracy by the Democratic National Committee to create violence and incite violence at Donald Trump events. Well, joining me now here in the Allstate Showcase studio is Jim Allen, spokesman for the Chicago Board of Elections. And I know you were up late last night, as I think all of us were in Chicago.
Oh, absolutely. I was out with
you. Don't sound a bit like you just got out of bed, by the way.
I was up with 300 of my closest friends at Fitzgerald's and Berwyn. And as a Sox fan, I enjoyed it. I just soaked it in and watching the reactions of my friends who've been long suffering but loyal Cub fans. And it was just a tremendous feeling, I think, for anybody who loves baseball. Yeah, you know, I've heard stories about people in airports in L.A. who were applauding.
Oh.
You know, it just, this has a national implication.
They have a national following after being on WGN, the superstation, for all those years. And it's just a tremendous thing for Chicago and a tremendous thing, even bigger, for Cub fans.
And it's a nice diversion from the politics.
Oh, absolutely. Needed diversion. I was on the phone with a cousin of mine up in the Baraboo Portage area in Wisconsin, and he's like, Jimmy, you've got my connection, right? You know, you're my connection to Cubs tickets for the World Series. I was like, I don't think so. I'm not an elected official.
And, of course, now with the city ethics ruling, they have to perform duties if you're going to be taking advantage of these tickets.
Yeah, I'm not touching that. not with a 50-foot foul pole.
Very fair enough, fair enough. Well, Jim, I wanted to have you on the show because, you know, tomorrow is a big day. We've had early voting going on for a couple of weeks now. But tomorrow is a big day because this is when early voting rolls out into the communities.
Exactly.
Can you tell us what that's about?
So all across the state, the election officials are going to be opening early voting sites that are going to be expanding out into other locations. So in the city of Chicago, we'll have one in each of our 50 wards. And in suburban Cook County, there are going to be sites in, there are going to be 50 sites, so even more than one township or more than one site per township. And what we're really emphasizing is these are early voting and registration centers, whether you're in Lake County, Will, DuPage, Chicago, wherever, because we don't want people to wait until Election Day to use registration services. That's the new wrinkle with this presidential election, is that we're going to have Election Day registration. But if there's a question about your registration, you need to register for the first time, update your name or address, do it during early voting. Don't risk having to go to your polling place that you don't know yet on election day and encountering a line. So early vote and registration is going to open up at multiple sites, hundreds of sites all across the state.
Now, on same-day registration, are those ballots counted as provisional ballots?
Absolutely not. Those are normal ballots. So you're gonna, if you're registering or updating your registration, whether during early voting, or on election day, you need two forms of ID, at least one of which shows your current address.
And what have we seen as far as vote registration trends in the city?
Oh, we're up. We're considerably up. We're going to be at least 1.56 million, and that doesn't include all the activity we're going to have during early voting. We've never had the deadlines go this long, so today is the last day to use online registration through 11:59 p.m. If you have an Illinois driver's license or an Illinois state ID, you can register online. You can update your address, even if you haven't updated that driver's license yet. So that's a convenience. Visit our website at chicagoelections.com, and there's a link to register online. But for those who don't today, visit an early voting center. If you absolutely have to, you can wait until election day, but we're strongly encouraging people to get that done now.
Now, in addition to the rollout of early voting into the wards, you guys also have that early vote superstation.
Exactly. That's open today from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m.
And I know you guys are asking people to take advantage of Sundays.
Sundays, there's this myth out there that if we had Election Day on a holiday or a Sunday, there'd be better turnout. And I can tell you from 11 years, this is our 11th year of early voting, of data that we have, that Sundays are actually the least popular or least used days for early voting. So if you want to beat the lines, go to one of these early voting sites on a Sunday, whether it's today or next Sunday or the Sunday before Election Day, and I think you're going to find that you're going to be in and out in a hurry.
That super center is located
15 West Washington. And that's real convenient to all the loop lines, all the major bus lines that come into the loop. So it's at 15 West Washington. It's a former Walgreens, and we have more than 100 voting stations there. So people are getting in and out of there. We've handled easily 1,300 to 1,500 people in a day, whereas that used to be kind of our tipping point at our old downtown site. So now we're going to be able to handle 4,700, 5,000 people in a day when it gets to the peak period toward the final days.
We're speaking with Jim Allen. He's the spokesman for the Chicago Board of Elections. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson. here as we talk politics and celebrate the Chicago Cubs, the winners of the National League pennant, going to the World Series. I'm speaking with Jim Allen. He's here in the Allstate Showcase studio, and Jim's spokesman for the Chicago Board of Elections, and we're letting everybody know that early voting is moving out into the wards after this kind of an unprecedented first-time period of early voting, you know, having begun so far in advance.
Right. This is the traditional start of early voting when people really have their minds made up 15 days before Election Day. So tomorrow, all the sites will be open in all 50 wards. All of them will be open 9 to 5, Monday through Saturday. On Sundays, all of them will be open 10 to 4. So we have nothing really to measure the current numbers from. We've had about 21,000 people use our early voting super site, which was, you know, for people who might be going out of town or who just have their minds made up. But we have no way to compare that to any other year because this was the first time it started really, really early, 40 days before Election Day.
And now is the measuring stick.
Now is the measuring stick. Now, 15 days before, we're going to see the big numbers, what we hope are the big numbers, but presidential elections are when we really see large numbers of voters use early voting because it's a measure of how many people have their minds made up, and that's usually done by the middle of October. You know, and just like baseball is coming down to the end, we're down to the end of the election process now.
We've got a call from Ron. Ron, welcome as always to the Sunday Spin.
Oh, good morning, Rick. Mr. Allen, I have a quick comment regarding same-day registration. I've registered in 1976. I have not missed an election, and I take pride in going to vote on Election Day. Not early, no mail-in. That's just how I feel. But
good.
I do have a problem. You know, I know we want to get full participation in this process, but same-day registration to me, if you didn't take time to register prior to the day, because, see, that also could prolong the process. If someone has already registered, they're coming in, they're having to go through, checking it. I have a pet peeve about that. I'm almost feel as if you didn't take time to register before that, I really don't really want you to even be involved in the process. But commenting on that, I don't have a problem with early registration, but I'm totally, totally against same-day registration. That just implied to me that you're probably just lazy. So have a good day. Thanks, Rick.
All right. Thank you, Ron. Well,
no, I think that's a valid question. I hear that from a lot of voters. But, we're the election administrators. We didn't, we're charted with executing the law as it is. And I think the philosophy of the lawmakers and others is that this has been tried and it's worked out really well in many other states. And wherever it's been tried, interestingly, they've never reversed it. And they've attempted to. And they've attempted, in Maine there was a referendum, statewide referendum, and voters said, absolutely not, you're not taking this away. And that was after having it for, a couple of decades. They've had it in Wisconsin for 3 decades. They've had it in Minnesota. Even longer. Montana, they tried to roll it back there, and it passed in every single county, red or blue. For old fogies like myself, not Ron, I'm sure he's a young man, we've been registered in the same place for many, many years, so we got it taken care of many years ago. But really, it's a recognition that voting doesn't need to be a two-step process where you have to register a month before Election Day and then, vote on a separate day. And so this is more of a service for people who are at more mobile stages of their life. And I'm speaking to you, millennials, because our biggest use is going to be on the college campuses. We know that from the March primary. We had 35,000 people use early voting, but if we looked at the top 27 precincts, they were all around Loyola, University of Chicago, DePaul, so on and so forth. So people who are on the move and who aren't living at the same place they did last semester, or they found a new job, they found a new living arrangement, they found a new apartment, whatever, that's what this is intended to address, so that people aren't disenfranchised simply because they've moved and they couldn't get around to registering. But I understand Ron's sentiment, but hopefully it won't be an inconvenience for him.
One last thing I want to talk to you about is obviously in the presidential campaign, We have one of the candidates contending that the system is rigged, that the results are rigged, pointing out places like Philadelphia, Chicago, and St. Louis. And I want you to address that.
Well, Ricky, you and I have had this conversation before. We know our history in Chicago. And it's, you know, 50 years ago, 60 years ago, it was not a pretty history. But we've come a long way since then. In the last 10 years, we've had 20 elections, 9 million ballots cast. We've had maybe a handful of referrals to the state's attorney's office. But we're not perfect. We don't claim perfection, but we're definitely moving in the right direction. There's now a statewide database to look for and eliminate duplicate registrations, to update anything that happens in terms of death records, so that, you know, even if someone from one jurisdiction goes to a nursing home and passes away in another jurisdiction, it's going to flag it in the system 99.9% of the time. So it's that last tenth of a percent that we're looking to solve. But, you know, you know, after the recounts we've been through in various parts of the city, where not one vote has ever been reversed as a result of either the machinery, you know, failing to, you know, log a vote properly, or because of fraud, I can, you know, assure you that we're on top of this, and well, you know, and we always have to be on the lookout.
The technology has gotten better, as you mentioned. The state database. You guys are using electronic poll books, which are all linked together.
Absolutely. I mean, the electronic poll books, like in early voting, we've made it virtually impossible. All those sites are real-time connected with each other, so that if someone were to attempt to vote more than once, you know, it would show up immediately. As I've told you before, we have a hard enough time getting people to vote once in many elections, much less twice. But we take the prevention and detection of fraud very seriously. And, you know, we're going to do everything we can to get that last tenth of a percent, not of the votes, but just of the voter rolls, that much cleaner.
And also you expressed some concern about it with some of the rhetoric about voter intimidation tactics.
There's been talk of having people be kind of aggressive poll watchers. Poll watchers serve a value. They make sure that when they're in a polling place, they can see how many people came in and voted. And at the end of the day, if 100 people came in and voted, that tape should not have 101 votes, you know. And that's an important function of the poll watchers, as well as, you know, making sure that the judges are following all the rules, that everything is safeguarded from the opening of the polls to the close of the polls. But if they cross that line into approaching and trying to question and badger voters, that's going to be a concern. I don't think so in some of the states that aren't swing states, but I think there's talk of having this aggressive poll watcher. And, you know, it concerns me when I hear people say, you know, you should look for people who look a certain way. What does that mean, you know? Because as Americans, we look all kinds of different ways. We've come from all, you know, very few of us have, you know, indigenous roots here. You know, most of us come from different areas.
That's Jim Allen. He's the spokesman for the Chicago Board of Elections. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin.
Now the Sunday Spin continues on 720 WGN. Here's Rick Pearson.
Good Sunday morning, everyone. Welcome to the second hour of the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune here in the Allstate Showcase studio on Tribune Tower on this glorious celebratory Sunday morning. We're playing some moments of the highlights and or lowlights of the final debate between Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump and Democratic presidential nominee Hillary Clinton. And I think one of the telling moments of the debate came when Donald Trump said that he wouldn't necessarily accept the results of the election. Later he said he would, but only if he won. Here's Hillary Clinton's response.
That is not the way our democracy works. We've been around for 240 years. We've had free and fair elections. We've accepted the outcomes when we may not have liked them. And that is what must be expected of anyone standing on a debate stage during a general election. You know, President Obama said the other day, when you're whining before the game is even finished, it just shows you're not up to doing the job. And let's be clear about what he is saying and what that means. He is denigrating. He's talking down our democracy. And I, for one, am appalled that somebody who is the nominee of one of our two major parties would take that kind of position.
Now, meanwhile, Trump is trying to lay out a closing days case for being elected. And that includes pledging to create a better national economy, and he features that in a new TV ad.
Our economy once dominated the world, and our middle class thrived. Today, jobs are gone, factories closed, because of bad trade deals pushed by the Clintons that sent our jobs to other countries. Donald Trump's plan, renegotiate NAFTA, stop foreign nations from cheating us, cut taxes to reopen factories. Donald Trump knows business, and he'll fight for the American worker.
I'm Donald Trump, and I approve this message.
That's Donald Trump's latest ad. Well, joining me now on the show is my good friend John McCormick, political reporter for Bloomberg News, former colleague of mine at the Chicago Tribune. John, thanks for getting up with me this morning.
Good morning, Rick. It's always an honor to be on with the dean of the Chicago Political Press Corps.
Oh, please. All right, here we go back to the age thing again. Why do people keep doing that to me?
It's good to be the dean.
It is?
Yeah, why not?
What are the perks?
Respect and honor.
Okay, how much do I owe you?
A couple beers at the Billy Goat, maybe.
Yeah, there you go. Fair enough. Well, John, seriously, thank you so much for joining me. And I want to talk to you about a couple of things. One, I know that you had authored the Bloomberg story on the poll that Bloomberg did just before that final debate that Ann Salzer conducted for you guys. And that had a Clinton advantage 47-38 over Donald Trump. And now we're just getting word that ABC News, in its inaugural tracking poll, shows Clinton 50, Trump 38, Gary Johnson 5, Jill Stein 2. And I mean, that's the ABC poll. But when you look at your numbers from before the debate, and you kind of wonder, and it's a subjective thing about what did Trump do in that debate? And I think that telling line about not willing to accept the election results was really kind of a deal breaker for some people.
Yeah, I don't think the debate performance helped him in any way. And it was, you know, things were looking pretty dire for him going into the debate. He needed a really good night, and he did not have one. He was having an okay debate, probably one of his better performances up until that moment. But I think that does, not sit very well with a lot of voters. And the Clinton campaign and all of her surrogates just absolutely pounced on that for the following, you know, 2 or 3 days. So he's had pretty much bad news cycles, for really a couple weeks now, and including since the debate.
Well, and Clinton pounced on it, but frankly, that was kind of the headline for, of the debate.
Absolutely. I mean, it was sort of, an extraordinary statement for him to make. I mean, it's, you know, one of the underpinnings of American democracy that you accept the will of the voters and that there's a peaceful transfer of power. So it was pretty jarring. I mean, I was in the filing center in Las Vegas, and, you know, there were lots of audible sort of gasps when he said that.
Well, and it's kind of like, I think, frankly, all three of these debates where you kind of see, you know, there's the good Donald Trump and then there's the Donald Trump, and that Clinton showed the ability to, you know, get under his skin a little bit.
Yeah, no, she did. I mean, she's known for doing her homework. She very much did her homework for these debates. They, you know, psychologically profiled Trump. They studied ways to sort of get under his skin, and she, really masterfully did that in all three debates, including this third one. He does have fairly thin skin. It's not that hard to get him riled and off script.
And I think that ruins kind of the efforts that he tries to make to, you know, raise questions about her qualifications, her service as Secretary of State, the Benghazi, the emails, all of that kind of goes out the window by his own doing.
Yeah, no, he's had lots of self-destructive moments throughout this campaign, no question.
In your poll, what give us a couple of the more interesting takeaways that you came up with?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the headline number was 9 points, but when you drill down into the demographics of it, it's pretty you know, pretty troubling for his side. Clinton had really trailed among men throughout the summer, and we had her up by 2 points among men. So she's even doing well now with one of the demographic groups that had been her biggest challenge. Of course, she's done well with women throughout the campaign, and we had her up by 17 points among women. So that's a, you know, a huge part of her constituency, obviously. And so she's just really dominating with every demographic group. And, you know, as you mentioned, I'm an alum of the Chicago Tribune, and I remember one senior political reporter, you know, on election night, always reminding us of the famous Dewey defeats Truman headline. And so, you know, no election is over until it's over. That said, you really can't point to any hard data out there that suggests that Trump is going to win this based on fundraising, based on polling, based on what's happening with the early voting, based on, you know, advertising footprint. So it's this poll, along with a lot of other data points, just suggests that, you know, Trump almost needs a miracle or some kind of massive, huge October or early November surprise to shake this thing up.
We're speaking with John McCormick. He's political reporter for Bloomberg News. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin.
Baseball season's underway. Well, you better get ready for a brand new day. Hey, Chicago, what do you say? The Cubs are gonna win today. They're singing,
go Cubs, go. Go Cubs, go. In Chicago, what do you say? The Cubs are gonna win today.
Rick Pearson here on the Sunday Spin. I cannot get that song out of my head. I heard it in my dreams in the few hours sleep that I caught. Well, once again, joining me here on the Sunday Spin is John McCormick. He's political reporter for Bloomberg News, former colleague from the Tribune, a graduate of the David Yepsen School of Journalism.
Absolutely.
Is that certainly an honor, and of course our good friend David formerly from the Des Moines Register and director of the Paul Simon Public Policy Institute, and he is actually going to take retirement. Although
yeah,
it's hard to believe Yepsen being retired from anything.
I know. I had a brief email exchange with him this week on that news, and I'm sure he'll be around. We're still going to see him on national TV, and certainly every time the Iowa caucuses come up, we'll see him. That's where I met him, of course, at the Des Moines Register.
Well, I will certainly be tapping his knowledge because I know he will be involved, and he is one of the best watchers of all things politics.
Super smart guy.
Well, you know, we were talking about your poll that was pre-debate, and we were talked about at the debate the issue of Trump saying, you know, refusing to say whether he'd accept the Clinton victory. And in that ABC News tracking poll that's out today, 65% of voters say they disapprove of Trump's refusal to accept the election. But one of the questions I had was, you know, throughout the early part of this campaign, this lengthy campaign, was the question of is there an enthusiasm gap? And one of the interesting findings in the Bloomberg poll was that Trump supporters are more enthusiastic.
Yeah, they're hardcore. I mean, he does have this base of support that is super excited about him and motivated, and I think they're going to be there. you know, it's just a question of how high that ceiling is. You know, it seems as if it's someplace in the sort of high 30s or low 40s. And they are enthused. They're excited about him. Clinton's supporters have, you know, been a little bit more skeptical about her throughout this process, although in the end here, they're starting to rev up a little bit as well. And so turnout will be important for Clinton. It's one reason why, you know, President Obama, Michelle Obama, Joe Biden, you know, this cast of surrogates that she has are going to be out traveling extensively in these battleground states, trying to sort of gin up the excitement and rally and get people into early voting, as you talked about earlier on the show, and then, you know, into the actual polls on November 8th.
Well, and not just in the battleground states, but it's like for Clinton, she sees an expanded map because of potential down ballot races.
Yeah, absolutely. And the expansion of potential battleground states like Arizona, you know, we don't usually think of Arizona and Georgia as battleground
right.
states, but she is putting resources there, and the fact that we're even talking about that in October is sort of amazing. She's starting to pivot a little bit more, you know, to those down ballot races and focus on them a little bit more in Pennsylvania. Yesterday, she was, you know, very focused on the Senate race there, much more so than on her presidential rival Donald Trump. So, if they want to have a mandate, whether Congress will still, you know, the House is almost certainly still going to be controlled by Republicans. The Senate is very much more on the bubble. But if she can help push a Democratic majority into the Senate, that would obviously be very helpful for her from a governing standpoint.
Well, like you mentioned in Pennsylvania, Pat Toomey seems to be one of those Republicans who appears to have done the proper dance to distance himself from Trump.
Yeah, he has. Although it's a hard thing to do, and you know, Clinton, you know, obviously sought to link him to Trump yesterday, and so that's going to be a key race to watch. You know, the race in neighboring Indiana here is going to be a very important race to watch as well in terms of deciding who controls the Senate.
And the numbers aren't necessarily as good as they used to be for Trump over there in Indiana.
No, I mean, I haven't seen any recent polling. Maybe you have, but you know, that we think of that as a pretty red state. My guess is that he'll carry it, but you never know if this is turning into more of a Democratic wave election.
Yeah, and plus Evan Bayh is a known quantity as the Democratic candidate for the U.S. Senate over there.
Yeah, although the Republicans have done a pretty good job of attacking his resume and you know, business experience and ties to lobbying and so forth, and whether he's still strongly tied to the state or not. So he's come under a lot of attack, and that race is looking closer than a lot of people expected it to be.
Do you really think there, in the end, there, and this is obviously subjective, but do you think there really will be kind of a down ballot relationship, a coattail relationship on the presidential?
Not necessarily. In fact, I think some people are going to, you know, maybe they're going to vote for Clinton, but they may vote for Republican down ballot. A lot of people do like divided government, or they're going to, you know, there'll be some Republicans who won't vote for Trump, but they'll continue to vote for Republicans down ballot. So I think, you know, our friend Jim Allen, who you had on earlier in the election business, they talk about something called undervoting. And
right.
I think there'll be a lot of undervoting in this election, and it's where you leave, you know, one name blank on the ballot. And so there may be a lot of people out there who don't want to vote for Trump or Clinton. Usually the presidential race has the highest proportion of people who mark that on their ballots, but in this race it may not be the case.
Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting to look at the exits and check about ticket splitting.
Yeah, no, I think there'll be some of that. I mean, the other thing that we're seeing that, you know, I'm a sort of a student of demographics. I study a lot of census data and demographics. And one thing you're seeing in this election, you know, that's extremely stark is educational attainment in terms of, You know, people with the highest levels of educational attainment are voting for Clinton in overwhelming numbers. People with the lowest levels of educational attainment are voting for Trump in the highest proportions. And so that's the measure that I'm using in predicting a lot of these states in terms of how I think they may go. And so Trump is doing well in places like Iowa and Ohio that have some of the lower levels of educational attainment. He's not doing well in a state like Colorado, which has one of the highest levels of educational attainment. There's a lot of Hispanics in Colorado as well, so that's another big variable. But that on election night, that's one sort of data set that I'm going to have at the ready is how educated are these states? Because it seems to be a really good predictor this time for how the polling is going.
A great key for things to watch on election night on November 8th. John McCormick, political reporter for Bloomberg and Bloomberg News. Thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Thanks, Rick.
We'll be back with more right after this. Up ahead on the Sunday Spin, we'll be speaking to Daniel Biss. He's state senator, a Democrat from Evanston. We'll be talking about leading Illinois for tomorrow, the federal super PAC that he is leading. Ricardo Muti and the Chicago Symphony Orchestra's salute to the Cubs with Take Me Out to the Ball Game. A celebratory Sunday here on Michigan Avenue in downtown Chicago.
You might say joy in Mudville. There is joy in Mudville.
Well, we don't have a Casey to strike
That's
out.
That's right. No Casey at the bat today. No, sir.
Let's just enjoy it. Let's just enjoy it as we head on to Cleveland for the first game of the World Series, Cleveland Indians versus Chicago Cubs, Tuesday night at 7 o'clock. I saw that actually the Cleveland Cavaliers are supposed to have their ring ceremony in their game on Tuesday night in Cleveland, and they've actually pushed back the game by a half hour to accommodate the World Series interest. So it's they're calling it the Year of Cleveland. Mm-hmm. John Kasich, the governor, one time presidential candidate, but the Cavs already won. So let's just all bring it home to Chicago.
Offhand, Andy, do you remember, or Rick, when the Cleveland was in it last?
48.
They last won it in 48. They won were last 48. In it in 1997.
97, yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
So they had their chance. Now it's our turn.
That's recent history.
It's
child's play. Come on.
There you go. Well, joining me now on the Sunday Spin is State Senator Dan Biss. He's a Democrat from Evanston. And the senator is the chairman of Leading Illinois for Tomorrow to give voters a chance to lift up our state. And that's a new federal political action committee, and you've probably seen or heard these ads that seek to link Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump to Republican Governor Bruce Rauner. Senator, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Thanks so much for having me.
So what truly is the purpose of LIFT?
Well, here's what we're trying to do. As you know, Governor Rauner and a couple of his friends have put just a completely unbelievable amount of money into campaigns in this election cycle. But they're not only putting money into campaigns; they're putting money into a general effort to communicate to the public, broadly speaking, what they think Republicans are about and what they think Democrats are about. And, in my opinion, they're communicating very unhelpful or even inaccurate information. And so what LIFT is trying to do is to communicate a different point of view about the basic values and principles of the Republican and Democratic parties, and in particular what the people of Illinois should expect to see in the way of approach and solutions from Republicans and Democrats.
Well, and I know that's been one thing you've been concerned about, even before these advertisements, is a feeling, and maybe I'm too broadly characterizing this, but a feeling that Democrats aren't communicating an alternative message to the Republicans.
That's right, Rick. And as a matter of fact, last time I was on your show, it was to talk about a different, but I think very related project of mine that I've been calling Road Back Illinois, where I've done a series of essays and videos talking about what I think the solutions for the state of Illinois that are consistent with Democratic and progressive values look like. Well, one thing you'll notice if you go to liftillinois.com, it's got a lot of public policy ideas about how to fix Illinois' problems in a way that strengthens the middle class, strengthens the economy, fixes our budget, creates equal opportunity for all, reforms our political system, reforms our tax code, and so forth. Now, we're running 30-second ads on TV. You can't go into a lot of policy detail in 30 seconds, but those ads direct people to this website. I think it's one more step toward positioning Democrats to really start tackling and solving Illinois' problems in a way that is not only consistent with our values, but advances our values.
Yeah, I think, I mean, you know, and this is just my view, but it's too much of this he said, she said kind of thing, where you're not communicating more of a positive or that kind of thing. Neither side has really done a good job of communicating a positive.
Well, I don't think that's unfair. You know, it's tricky in a 30-second advertising environment, and frankly, it becomes a little bit of an arms race where when one side is saying incredibly negative things, the other side feels like they have to keep track. You know, our first ad, and we have a series of ads, and some of them are more have more positive content than others, but our first ad is the one that got a lot of attention that intersperses statements that Donald Trump has made that are, I think, repulsive to the overwhelming majority of people in Illinois, with Bruce Rauner saying, "I'm going to support the Republican nominee." Now, that's not a positive message. I'm not going to try to pretend it is. But I think it's an important message. I think that for most people in America right now who are just somewhat interested in government and politics, the thing most on their minds is, holy cow, what is going on with this presidential election? What is this man doing? How dare he behave this way? And it seems to me the governor of Illinois should have a pretty clear position on all of that. And I've been appalled and a little bit embarrassed for him that he doesn't have a clear position.
No, and indeed, every time that he's asked about the presidential race or, frankly, about his financial stake in even these legislative races, which we'll talk about in a minute, but whenever he's asked about it, he basically says, I've said everything I'm going to say about the presidential race, and that he doesn't have any real interest in the nitty-gritty of the legislative races. We'll talk about that in just a minute. We're going to take a quick break. We're speaking with Daniel Biss, state senator, Democrat from Evanston. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin.
We don't suck anymore. We don't suck anymore. We don't suck anymore like we used to do. We don't lose anymore. What was all of that for? We don't suck anymore like we used to do.
Welcome back to the Sunday Spin, the celebratory Sunday Spin. It's a little bit of music I actually played last week on the show. Yes, we don't suck anymore. Oh, God bless Chicago, you know? God bless the Cubbies. We're speaking with Dan Biss. He's state senator, Democrat from Evanston, and the senator is the chairman of LIFT, Leading Illinois for Tomorrow, and that's the federal PAC that's been running ads about Donald Trump, kind of linking him to Governor Rauner. And, Senator, I wanted to talk to you about the unprecedented amount of spending that's going on in these legislative races, some of it being driven by the governor himself. I have a story in the Sunday Final talking about that the fact that the governor has spent out of his personal or campaign funds or family funds that he's made $46 million in contributions this year. When he ran for governor, His personal spending was $27.5 million. We know this election's getting personal. We know it's a Bruce Rauner versus Michael Madigan kind of fight. But I'm curious, in the end, even if some seats do change either way, does it really change the dynamics of Springfield?
Well, it's a great question, but I just want to start by talking about some of what you said, even though you didn't frame it in question form.
Okay.
I want your listeners to understand how unprecedented this is, how obscene this is, how much more money this is than it used to be spent even very, very recently in state-level elections. We are moving very rapidly in a very, very dangerous direction. And that I think, it's ugly, it is very bad for democracy, and it's bad for the legislative process because it creates a situation where legislators feel that a tiny number of people can essentially throw them out of their job as retribution for a particular vote. So I just want to stress that, you know, because we are used to hearing, you know, for years and years about how problematic money in politics is, we can somehow hear those numbers like the $46 million you said and just assume it's always been like that or been like that for a decade. It hasn't. This is new. It's dangerous. It's scary. We've got to figure out a way to move away from this. But to your question, what difference will it all make? I don't know. And I think you asked the question in a way that is understandable and fair, and I don't blame you for it. But I do think that as long as we think of this as the personality-driven battle between Mike Madigan and Bruce Rauner, the outcomes for the state will not be good. These are two very, very tough, stubborn people. And if the question is, who's going to blink first? The answer is probably neither one, and the state will continue to be harmed. What we need to do is to find a different path out of this. We need some flexibility. We need the governor to put aside the parts of his agenda that Democrats are never going to be willing to participate in. We all need to recognize, especially the governor, who has had trouble recognizing this, that we have divided government. And divided government is a time for small, modest, moderate goals. And we need to find a way to do it that doesn't focus on the scorecard questions of who's winning, who's losing, who's tough, who's blinking, who's caving. Those are questions that will lead the state in a dangerous direction, or rather will lead the state to continue down the dangerous path that it's already on.
Well, when we talk about the money, and I've talked to Republican House Republican Leader Jim Durkin and Senate Republican Leader Redonio, and when I ask them about the unprecedented input of money from the governor, they say, well, that's just to, you know, he's providing equal resources to what the Democrats have traditionally gotten through their allies in organized labor and from the trial lawyers.
I mean, I have a lot of respect for those two people. I think they're good, well-intentioned people, though I don't always agree with them on policy. But I have to tell you, Rick, that statement is just false. I mean, that's a numerical assertion that's just wrong. The $46 million number you cited is just, you know, an awful lot more money than labor unions and trial lawyers ever used to contribute to elections. And I suspect it's more money than labor unions and trial lawyers will contribute this year, even though they're doing their best to keep up. And you know, there's a lot that can be said about what was wrong with Springfield and state government before Bruce Rauner got there. And I'm not someone who ducks that or pretends that everything was perfect until Bruce Rauner was inaugurated. That's not the case. But the level of control that he seeks to exert on the Republicans whose campaigns he funds is a whole new and different level. You know, you can argue about whether Democrats were too close to labor unions or not close enough to labor unions back, you know, before 2014. Different people have different views on that, but it's just a fact that Mike Madigan and John Collerton as the leaders and lots and lots and lots of rank-and-file Democrats took plenty of actions that the labor unions didn't like on a whole variety of different issues.
Including the pensions?
Including pensions, including collective bargaining reform for state employees, including retiree health care, including lots of issues in recent years. And again, some people think that's great. Some people think it's terrible. Some people think it's way too much. Some people think it's not enough. But the bottom line is that as a matter of, you know, facts, Democrats tried to be very close to labor unions for philosophical reasons, but also split off from them on a regular basis. The governor has not exhibited a willingness to allow the Republicans whose campaigns he's funding to split off from him ever, no matter how strongly held their principle in a different direction might be. That's a problem.
And frankly, there probably won't be an answer to the problem of the cash exertion in politics unless the U.S. Supreme Court acts differently.
Well, I think the U.S. Supreme Court is part of the problem, although I will tell you, frankly, people like to point to the Citizens United decision, which was a horrible and destructive decision. They like to point at it as the root of all problems, and I would say that as bad as it is, it's not the root of these problems. These are, you know, when Bruce Rauner writes a personal check, that's not about corporations having free speech rights. That's about Bruce Rauner having free speech rights. What we need to do is put more effective contribution limits into the system, because although we theoretically have contribution limits, Governor Rauner's been able to contribute, as you said, dozens and dozens of millions of dollars. If you were to have more effectively written and designed contribution limits, that would help. If you had better disclosure, that would help. And if you had small donor matching programs that said, hey, if a given candidate has the support of lots and lots of small donors giving $5, $10, $25 a piece, that money is matched so the person can become competitive without the help of the billionaires. That's the most effective way to push back against this without requiring any change on the national level or from the court system whatsoever. I think we've got to try to do that in the meantime, because I don't think we can afford to wait for the U.S. Supreme Court to reverse Citizens United. They have to do that. I believe they will eventually do that, but in the meantime, we have to act.
That's Daniel Biss, state senator, Democrat from Evanston. He's also the chairman of Leading Illinois for Tomorrow, the federal political action committee that is running TV and radio advertising. Senator, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Hey, thanks for having me, and go Cubs go.
Go Cubs go. We'll be back with more right after this. Well, that's all we have time for on this celebratory Sunday Spin edition, celebrating the Chicago Cubs and celebrating the fact that we're getting ever closer to Election Day. I want to thank my guests, Jim Allen from the Board of Elections from the City of Chicago, John McCormick from Bloomberg, Dan Biss, Democratic State Senator from Evanston, and I want to thank all of you for listening this morning. And now it's time to turn things over to the great Dean Richards.
Live in Los Angeles, of all places.
Are they weeping there?
You know what? They were kind of sad last night after the game. Most of the Dodgers fans were sad, but congratulatory. They get how much this means to us, what this means in baseball history. You know, they get it all, and they're like, wow, you know, that's you guys deserve it. You know, you guys deserve it. Interestingly, the only one really nasty, hate-filled response that I had, because I've been out here since Thursday. I've been wearing my Cubs hat nonstop everywhere just to taunt people.
Of course.
The only one nasty, nasty response that I got was from a guy who said he's a Sox fan. He's not happy that the Cubs are going to the World Series, and said, pointed his finger right in my face, "You are a traitor." Said, "Where did you grow up? You grew up on the South Side. You can't be happy that Chicago's in the World Series." Like, you know, we were all happy. I think in 2005, sure, People were happy that our city was in the World Series. But that was the nastiest confrontation that I had.
Well, I was wondering if Dodger fans watching a game on TV are like the Dodger fans that go see the game in person, if they all just turn off the TV after seven innings.
I watched it because I had to go see a movie last night. I was able to watch the game, but I had to go see a movie last night. So I watched the game in the room by myself. I'm sitting here like an idiot by myself, screaming and yelling and getting emotional, you know, about the whole thing. But while I was at the theater, of course, I had my Cubs hat on, and people are high-fiving me and congratulating me like I had something to do with the whole thing. So people seem to be pretty good sports for the most part out here.
Well, it's just such a wonderful feeling. I will just tell you that.
I echo every. I've heard your whole show listening this morning. I echo the whole thing about how amazing and how emotional it was. Like Andy Mazur said earlier, first thing I thought of was, I wish Ronnie was here to see this.
Absolutely.
Ron Santo was here to see it. So anyway, we've got lots of Cubs guests today. We've got a lot of Cubs magic in addition to all the regular features. Rick, have a great day today.
I'll be listening.
Go out and tear up the town a little bit. We were uncharacteristically calm last night, apparently, in Chicago last night. So I'm depending on you to go turn over some cars or something like that.
I have to behave. I have an election coming up.
That's true. Who even wants to think about the election?
I understand. I enjoy this diversion. Trust
right.
me.
Right. Yeah. I said the same thing I guess I have to talk about movies after all this. But anyway, we've got a lot of good stuff this morning.